I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Getting kids back to class. It is Ontario's strategy for September. The plan to return students to school full time and the ambitious goal from the province's top doctor.
I really don't see our schools closing going into the fall and winter and spring. And I believe that's the same stance of all of our medical officers of health.
What students, parents, and teachers can expect in the weeks ahead and the lingering questions for families that remain unanswered. Good evening. Sports, field trips, and extracurriculars are back, and so are face coverings indoors.
But the guidance is thin when it comes to vaccines and dealing with COVID outbreaks. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Hi, Michelle. Students and parents are going to be familiar with some of these rules in schools because they have been in place since last September. Students will have to take a self-screening tool before they attend class. And when they get there, they'll be grouped into cohorts. They will have to physically distance and they'll be required to wear masks in all indoor settings. Here's what they get in return. Extracurricular activities, clubs, and sports will return. Even things like singing in a choir and playing an instrument will once again be allowed.
After consecutive years of COVID-19 disruption, the province's top doctor is signaling the end of school closures in Ontario.
Yeah, I really don't see our schools closing going into the fall and winter and spring. And I believe that's the same stance of all of our medical officers of health. We will do our utmost to keep schools open for all students and families.
The Chief Medical Officer of Health cautions, however, that students will have to adhere to public health measures when they return, including physical distancing, cohorting, and mandatory masking from grades 1 to 12.
Our goal is to have a safe reopening of our schools that lasts the entire academic year. Wearing a mask is a proven way to help mitigate the spread of COVID-19.
But life as students once knew it will largely return. Students can attend assembly, use libraries, and gather in the cafeteria. Extracurricular activities, sports, and clubs will return with limited restrictions. What this document does not answer, however, are the key questions, such as rules for unvaccinated students, how will schools manage outbreaks, and whether individual classrooms could be dismissed in the event of a positive case. The return to school comes at an uncertain time, when the Delta variant is triggering new waves of COVID-19, particularly in the United States.
And you're watching Delta explode in various counties. It's just, you know, you've got healthcare systems that are, you know, transferring people out to other healthcare systems because they're getting overwhelmed. It's reminiscent of the bad old days when we were experiencing something similar.
Dr. Kieran Moore says he is watching the rise carefully, trying to map out the impact here.
We do see a rise of cases through September, potentially rising in October, November.
Dr. Moore says the virus is largely spreading among the unvaccinated, who were 8 times more likely to catch the virus in July, which is why some say the province needs a new strategy.
But for the most part, vaccination does protect us against a lot of this severe disease. And that's why I think that this wave, though it will happen, it's going to be something much less severe as before.
Saying vaccines are now the best way to avoid the worst case scenario.
A lot of parents are likely wondering, when will your child need to go get a COVID-19 test? The Chief Medical Officer of Health says the list of symptoms has been shortened. They include fever, cough, increasing shortness of breath, loss of taste or smell, vomiting, and diarrhea. Dr. Kieran Moore also says they're looking at new testing methods, including a cheek swab and a spit test, not the invasive PCR test that a lot of us are accustomed to. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. And while this document provides some insight into what school will look like, critics argue it's more notable for what's not in it.
Details around class size or measures that could get more children vaccinated between now and the start of class. CTV's John Woodward is live in North York with more. John.
Nathan, provincial data shows that only 56% of 12 to 15-year-olds in this neighborhood have even got one COVID-19 vaccination, which means the odds of some classmates being vaccinated are only about the same as flipping a coin.
Solomon Hagos' daughter, Eliana, is excited to go to grade 3 at Stylecroft Elementary in September.
I get to learn a lot of stuff there.
Her dad, a little more concerned.
I'm worried because the vaccination rate is still low.
The smallest section in the provincial government's back-to-school plan is about vaccination, just a paragraph, leaving parents wondering if some schools will be more at risk than others. Provincially, the vaccination rate for people aged 12 to 15 is in the mid-60%, but rates vary wildly around the province. In this map, the redder an area, the lower its vaccination rate, a low of 24% in N5H, the postal code that includes Aylmer, Ontario, to a high of 100% in K1P in downtown Ottawa. In the GTA, just 47% in M6A Lawrence Heights and 48% in LOJ in Vaughan. At the top end, affluent neighborhoods are generally more vaccinated, 84.5% in M6R in Roncesvalles, 86% in M4G in Leaside, and 86% in M4N in Lawrence Park.
We need, 100%. We need 90% in order to have safe schools and in order to have those schools continuing normal functioning.
I'm worried about watching kids in the ICU. If they end up in schools with lousy ventilation.
Other experts say with less focus on vaccination, there should have been more on ventilation.
We've had a year and a half. We've known COVID has been airborne for a year. There's been plenty of time. So to me, that is a gigantic fail.
Colin Furness says turn schools into vaccination clinics and let kids consent. Stylecroft itself was turned into a vaccination clinic Tuesday. Omar Hagos was among the handful that turned up, vaccinating his 13-year-old son.
I hope it's going to be okay. So I really want them to go to school and study in person, instead of online.
He's hoping for the best in September.
One other point, children are only eligible for vaccinations when they turn 12. So Dr. Colin Furness says, why not change that from a birthday to a birth year? Give more kids a chance to get vaccinated in the run-up to September and give them a better chance. Reporting live from Stylecroft Elementary, I'm John Woodward. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, John. And you can visit our website for complete coverage of Ontario's back-to-school plan. Multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has a breakdown of this newest guidance at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
When it comes to new cases of COVID-19, the province's number is back below the 200 mark. Public Health Ontario is logging 164 new cases today, 168 yesterday. That brings the province's total to nearly 551,000 over the course of the pandemic. 151 more cases are considered resolved, pushing that figure to nearly 540,000. And one more death is linked to the virus, meaning 9,349 lives have been lost to COVID-19 here in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 45 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 23 in York Region and 22 in Peel. Halton Region has 6 new cases, with 5 in Hamilton, 4 in Durham, and 2 in Niagara.
And those numbers are the result of more than 11,000 tests processed over the last 24 hours. The positivity rate now sits at 1.3%, and nearly 5,000 tests remain under investigation.
Also tonight, concerns and questions over breakthrough infections of COVID-19. How many fully vaccinated people are testing positive in this province, and what contracting the virus may look like if you're double dosed. For many kids across the province, September is still a distant thought, and summer camp is top of mind right now.
But they are not immune from virus outbreaks. In Muskoka, campers were sent home just hours after arriving. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with more. Natalie.
Hi, Michelle. Well, there have now been 4 confirmed cases and 2 more preliminary positive test results at the Muskoka Woods camp. All of the campers have now been sent home as officials conduct testing and contact tracing.
I received a phone call from Beckett telling us that his counselor had told him that there's COVID in the camp.
Sherry Mae Guthrie dropped off her son Beckett at Muskoka Woods camp on Sunday, but 4 hours later, he was back in the car on the way home after staff broke the news of the outbreak.
We realized it wasn't a joke, so we all kind of just packed up when we were kind of worried that, well, some of us might get COVID.
The first case of the virus was reported at the camp Saturday, the outbreak declared Sunday. Officials telling parents in a letter, at 5 p.m., just as arrival was taking place, we discovered an additional positive case that is outside of the original cohort. With the health and safety of our guests and staff being our top priority, we are making the very difficult decision to cancel week 5 at Muskoka Woods. 4 people, both staff and campers, have now tested positive. 2 more have received preliminary positive results.
Those who have tested positive have either been not immunized or incompletely immunized. They haven't had sort of 2 weeks after, at the minimum 2 weeks after the 2 doses.
There are some very strict COVID-19 protocols in place for Ontario overnight camps right now. Those include keeping campers in separate cohorts, having them self-isolate for 2 weeks before the start of camp, and screening and testing them for COVID-19 while they are there. At Arrowhead Camp in Muskoka, they are now 5 weeks into operation with the new COVID regulations, with no cases of the virus. They say the biggest change in protocols has to do with arrivals and departures.
Back in the day before COVID, campers would come to camp, their families would walk into the cabin. What we've done now is they're screened upon arrival, and when they arrive, there's different windows. The counselors come, they welcome them in the parking lot, then they walk them off to the cabins.
Back in Muskoka Woods, Sherry Mae Guthrie hopes she can send Beckett back soon.
I think it's good for his social well-being, mental well-being, and just for him just to be a regular Canadian kid for a week this summer.
As camps across the province try to maintain a sense of normalcy while staying safe. Health officials are now testing all of the Muskoka Woods camp staff, as well as any campers who were close contacts with the positive cases. Those full test results are still pending. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Natalie. More than 31,000 shots were administered across Ontario yesterday, meaning nearly 19.6 million doses have been given out over the course of the rollout. Roughly 5,100 of those shots were first doses, raising the number of people with at least one shot to nearly 10.5 million. And nearly 26,000 of yesterday's shots were second doses. So now more than 9 million people in Ontario are considered fully vaccinated. CTV's John Musselman is next live in Brampton, where the city's pushing back against some rules around face coverings. John.
Well, Nathan, the mayor says if you're inside, of course you should wear a mask. It should be mandatory. But if you're outside, he says now people should have a choice.
Depending on which way you pointed the camera today, some residents in Brampton were wearing masks outdoors, some were not. And Brampton Mayor Patrick Brown believes we have reached a point where it should be a choice, at least when people are outside.
Outdoors is a very low risk for transmission, and it's why our leading health officials have said that they're comfortable with people not wearing masks outdoors.
Brown says minor sports like children's soccer highlights the issue. The mayor says parents shouldn't be forced to wear a mask outside if they can socially distance. But the provincial regulations under Stage 3 still make masks mandatory for people in the stands. Brown says his bylaw officers are not enforcing that part of the provincial order.
If you want to have the public's goodwill with these policies, they need to be supported on evidence. And so I think where you lose the public is where you have policies that are overbreadth.
Still, there are residents expressing mixed views about making masks a choice outdoors.
I understand that he wants to make it optional for those people that don't like them, but I think to stay safe for people that still haven't gotten their shots or for elderly, you should just wear them anyways.
It really depends on what kind of gathering it is. If it's just like walking casually, yeah, sure.
We contacted Peel's Medical Officer of Health for his position on this. Dr. Lawrence Lowe wrote, quote, "For individuals who are unvaccinated, Peel Public Health's recommendations align with the advice of the Ontario Science Table that these individuals should adhere to a 2 out of 3 rule in terms of outdoor activities. This means when outdoors, masks aren't as necessary if adequate distancing can be maintained. In the event that distancing is not possible, then masks should be worn during the prolonged contact, even if outdoors. For individuals who are vaccinated, Peel Public Health recommendations align with the Public Health Agency of Canada, which states that in small groups outdoors, masking and distancing for such individuals is optional, except in large crowds.
And Dr. Lowe went on to add that people have to remain vigilant and they need to get double vaccinated. Reporting live in Brampton, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. Well, the sunshine out there mixed with spot-on summer temperatures are making for beautiful conditions tonight. Nalini Sharma is here. Nalini, I bet you're liking what you see on the radar.
I'm liking it, and I'm sure everybody out there is liking it as well after sort of a washout of a weekend. Yesterday was really nice. We have beautiful conditions for the evening. It's starting to feel, again, like a summer-like forecast with warm evenings, nice to be outside in your garden, on a patio. Nothing to report in terms of active weather on radar. In terms of the temperature story, we're into the 20s, feeling closer, for example, Peterborough sitting at 30 with the Humidex, Brantford right now 27, Mississauga 28 with the Humidex. For us, closer to home, the islands right now sitting at 24, feeling closer to 30, Pearson 25, feeling closer to 29, the wind's just under about 30 kilometers an hour, your overnight low at 17, which is beautiful conditions for the evening. The humidity will return. I'll have those details in the next few minutes.
All right, thanks, Nalini. Still ahead, reality sinking in for Raptor fans. Kyle Lowry leaving Toronto. How the city is saying so long as we break down that bittersweet move to Miami. Homes destroyed, lives uprooted, and a long road to recovery. It's been nearly 3 weeks since much of a Barrie neighborhood was torn apart by a tornado.
And for some residents, the scale of the devastation is only now becoming clear. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
The damage is still catastrophic. Progress is slowly being made as crews continue the painstaking cleanup.
It's been quite a ride.
Bailey Hartley just moving back into her home.
They've cut out some of the damage.
All the windows are boarded up, the floors have been removed.
I guess it was just water damage.
Trying to get life back on track for her young family after staying in hotels and Airbnbs. Nearly 3 weeks after the EF2 tornado rolled through her South Barrie neighborhood.
It feels weird because you don't have floors and a lot of your furniture you've had is gone. I know we've owned this home 7 years this past month, so you've built a life there, and so it's very sad in that way.
But there are some homes that can't be salvaged. The city has issued orders deeming 70 homes unsafe and has now granted access to 39 properties.
The tornado came in this...
Chantel Belli is just getting a clear picture of how much damage the tornado caused, now waiting on her insurance company to begin its assessment.
We still don't even have full proper coverage. Like, we could even be getting more water damage right now.
And is being told it will take a long road to rebuild.
The siding could take up to a year. The windows, we could have boarded windows into the winter. We don't know, because even with COVID, you know, there's been issues with supply.
The damage total is still being tallied.
There are more homes with roofs lost, at least 20 or 25. That generally means that the home is a write-off and has to be torn down.
As many families wait for answers, the community continues to provide support.
We've got toys, so paper towel.
Cher Brunn is part of a grassroots movement collecting donations and helping with the cleanup.
For the families, it's coming back into their homes. It's trying to decide, what do I really need versus what do I want? A lot of it's food, toiletries.
Support Zanera Anderson is grateful for after just receiving access to her home.
That was very traumatizing, one thing, but then how community got together, everybody, we didn't even know people who were just cleaning up our yard.
The province has activated its disaster recovery assistance program to help with emergency costs and repairs not covered by insurance. Impacted residents have until the end of November to apply. Mike Walker, CTV News, Barrie.
Below the border, the governor of New York is being urged to resign. Andrew Cuomo facing mounting pressure from many, including the U.S. president.
An investigation finding Cuomo sexually harassed nearly a dozen women and worked to retaliate against one of his accusers. CTV's Zoraida Allman is live with more. Zoraida.
Nathan, the 165-page report includes interviews with 179 witnesses and reviews of tens of thousands of documents. In the end, New York's attorney general says the evidence found in this probe paints, quote, a deeply disturbing yet clear picture of sexual harassment. After nearly 5 months, an independent investigation into allegations of sexual harassment against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has concluded.
Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women, and in doing so violated federal and state law.
New York's attorney general says the accusations of 11 women were corroborated and substantiated through multiple interviews and evidence.
Groping, kisses, hugging, and by making inappropriate comments.
One of those women, former executive assistant Charlotte Bennett.
He asked if I had trouble enjoying being with someone. Without explicitly saying it, He implied to me that I was old enough for him and he was lonely.
The investigation revealed a toxic workplace where employees, particularly young women, were afraid to come forward, fearing retaliation. In a taped response, Governor Cuomo denies the allegations.
That I never touched anyone inappropriately or made inappropriate sexual advances.
Saying his comments and actions were misinterpreted.
I welcome the opportunity for a full and fair review before a judge and a jury, because this just did not happen.
U.S. President Joe Biden at this afternoon's White House briefing calling on Andrew Cuomo to resign.
Are you now calling on him to resign?
Yes.
And if he doesn't resign, do you believe he should be impeached and removed from office?
Let's take one thing at a time here. I think he should resign.
Other high-profile Democrats echoing the calls for resignation, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Now, an impeachment investigation has been underway since the allegations were first made public in March. U.S. media now reporting New York State's Assembly has now called an emergency meeting in the wake of the investigation's findings. More than two-thirds of New York State senators are calling on Cuomo to resign. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. Meanwhile, New York will become the first major American city to require proof of vaccination at restaurants, gyms, and other indoor businesses. It's the latest in a series of initiatives intended to encourage more residents to get vaccinated as the U.S. enters a new phase of battling the Delta variant. About 60% of all New Yorkers have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine.
Back here in this province, you may have heard the term breakthrough case recently. Those who are double dose testing positive for COVID-19.
Medical experts now providing some context around those numbers and what people should know. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
In Ontario, COVID-19 is still finding a way to infect people who've been fully vaccinated, as some working in the ER say they're seeing the trickle of a possible fourth wave.
So we're starting to see more cases in hospital, and this is after 2 months of barely seeing anything. So I saw one person who was partially vaccinated who had a serious case of COVID.
Between December and July, Public Health Ontario reports 1,765 breakthrough cases. That means people fully vaccinated, more than 14 days after the second dose. Of those, about half were symptomatic and half asymptomatic. Looking at infections in long-term care, 14% are cited as breakthrough cases, yet those not protected still the vast majority at 62%. A message echoed by Dr. Kieran Moore, Ontario's top doctor.
Unvaccinated cases of COVID-19 accounted for 95.4% of COVID cases, with breakthrough cases accounting for only 0.5%.
One Ontario family doctor crunched the numbers around serious cases between mid-June and July. In red, deaths and hospitalizations among the unvaccinated. In green, people who are vaccinated make up only a small fraction. Moore says if you happen to be a breakthrough case, prepare for an illness with fewer complications.
The symptoms will be milder, they'll be shorter, they'll resolve quicker. You'll have typically less virus in the front of your nose, and the ability to spread virus will be less.
Medical experts say the vaccine is a barrier to the contagious Delta variant, just another reason to get the shot.
I don't think we need to be very concerned at all about breakthrough cases. What's worrying me is that there are people out there who are not vaccinated, children, as well as people who have so far not yet gotten vaccinated for whatever reason.
Doctors say because vaccines are not 100% effective, breakthrough cases are bound to be expected, emphasizing they will significantly help reduce severe outcomes and keep you out of hospital. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
14 medals and still counting for Team Canada at the Summer Games so far.
But their accomplishments go well beyond the podium while succeeding on the world's biggest sports stage. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, from Canada's track stars running in nearly 40 degrees Celsius temperatures to one of our women's soccer players standing up for everyone's right to play, our athletes are showing just how strong they are.
The GTA is well represented on the track, with Markham's Andre DeGrasse and Toronto's Aaron Brown, both ready to blaze the trail under scorching conditions in the 200-meter finals.
Aaron looks like he's ready. He's always been in the finals, and this might be his podium opportunity. He looked awesome this morning. And if he puts it together like he did in the semifinal, we may have two Canadians on the podium.
Meanwhile, DeGrasse set another Canadian record in his premier event and looks poised to add to the bronze he's already won in Tokyo.
He's naturally just about a 200-meter runner. You see how he comes on late in races. His top-end speed and speed maintenance is better than anyone else in the world. So, I mean, it's his to win.
Also winning is Canada's women's soccer team. The squad is guaranteed a medal as they prepare to play Sweden for the gold. But it's not the hardware in the spotlight. 25-year-old midfielder Quinn from Toronto is set to become the first openly transgender and non-binary athlete to win an Olympic medal.
What this speaks to is a larger conversation about being safe in the workplace. And so it speaks to the environment that Quinn is in, that they feel safe enough to come forward with the fullness of their being, the fullness of their life.
The team bond is also inspiring younger athletes.
Soccer means everything to me, and when you're on the field, those girls aren't just your teammates, they're your sisters, and you want to protect them as much as you want to win the game.
And winning has never been tougher, with stressors affecting all athletes' mental health in an Olympics like no other.
We often say that practice doesn't make perfect, but what it makes is patterns, and those are mental patterns and physical patterns. And with the delay of these games and the whole pandemic, all it's done is basically shatter any routines or patterns.
Still, they are thriving, showing just how much it means to represent their country.
Now, it's fitting that DeGrasse and Brown will race together tomorrow because they're actually sharing a suite in the athletes' village. Now, they say they don't want to be mentally fatigued before the race, so their plan is to get a massage, watch cartoons, and get a good night's sleep. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Sounds fun. Thank you, Raheem. Well, they didn't strike gold, but two of the world's top gymnasts are receiving high marks for their courage and perseverance.
A Canadian and an American returned to the floor today after dealing with their own set of challenges. CTV's Joy Malbin has the story from Tokyo.
All eyes were on two champion gymnasts today. Canada's Ellie Black, who returned to competition after an ankle injury, and America's Simone Biles, who made a triumphant return after taking herself out of several competitions to focus on her mental health. With all that pressure riding on the U.S. superstar, Biles bounced back to take a bronze in the balance beam final. She said that she wanted the world to see that she's a fighter after revealing her struggle with what's called the twisties, where gymnasts lose their spatial awareness in the air, which can be very dangerous.
To bring the topic of mental health, I think it should be talked about a lot more. At the end of the day, we're not just entertainment, we're humans.
Watchers say that for Biles, it is much more than just persistence.
Or she wanted to get on top of the podium. She is a competitor. But facing her fears, getting that monkey off her back and stepping out and competing again.
For Canada's Ellie Black, it was oh so close. She just missed the podium. Powering through the pain from that sprained left ankle, Black held on to the third position until China took gold. And breaking barriers, New Zealand's Laurel Hubbard, the first openly transgender woman weightlifter. She didn't medal, but perhaps has done much more.
As we move into a sort of new and more understanding world, people are starting to realize that people like me are just people. You know, we are human. And as such, I hope that just by being here, that's enough.
We're now in the home stretch of these games, and while COVID is still a concern, Greece had to pull four of its athletes after they tested positive. The focus is on some amazing athletes who push harder and higher. Joy Malbin, CTV News, Tokyo.
With two Canadian teams still in the hunt, hopes were high we would win a medal in women's beach volleyball. But Canada's world number one ranked duo were ousted today. Sarah Pavin and Melissa Humana Paredes lost to Australia in the quarterfinals. And that happened shortly after Canadian teammates Heather Bansley and Brandy Wilkerson were also bounced. They were beaten by Latvia in another quarterfinal game. From Jurassic Park to South Beach, seeing Kyle Lowry wearing a Miami Heat uniform will take some time to adjust to.
We the North sharing their memories of a player who brought more than just his basketball skills to Toronto. CTV's Sean Leithong is live with more. Sean.
Oh, Michelle and Nathan, in the past when big-name players have left Toronto, Raptors fans have almost taken it personally. But this time it's a little bit different, as the fans have been telling us this won't change the way they feel about Kyle Lowry.
This image of Kyle Lowry holding the Larry O'Brien Trophy, the leader bringing it home, the world champion Raptors greeted by fans, is unforgettable. 2 years later, some Raptors fans say the player can leave, the legacy will not.
He's never going to leave. He's always in our hearts.
Since joining the Raptors in 2012, Lowry carved his name into the record books. He's the team's all-time leader in three-pointers, assists, steals, and triple-doubles. He's also second in total points and third in rebounds. As his star grew in Toronto, Lowry became one of the most popular athletes in the city, known for having fun with teammate DeMar DeRozan.
I'm very confident we can get it done.
And he became known for speaking candidly, no matter what the topic.
Any comment on the travel ban in the United States?
I think it's absolute.
He was also a player who chose Toronto, twice re-signing with the team in 2014 and 2017, and was clutch in the deciding game of the 2019 NBA Finals, scoring the Raptors' first 11 points, lifting the team to victory. Off the court, Lowry became known for his generosity, with his Lowry Love Foundation focusing on the disadvantaged in the city and serving Thanksgiving dinner every year.
I want to give back and help as much as I possibly can.
Today, rapper Drake honored Lowry on Instagram, saying, "The city is yours eternally." Around the basketball courts in the city today, there are those who are sad.
Do you like Kyle Lowry?
That's my most favorite guy. I'm sad because he's like one of our star players.
But the feeling amongst fans isn't bitterness.
The fact that he's re-signed, won a championship, I think he fulfilled what he had to do here in the city.
Instead, there's almost an understanding that even though the uniform is changing,
he's always going to be a Raptor, yeah. He's always going to be the Toronto Raptor.
And the team has not yet commented. They're not expected to until the moratorium lifts on Friday. That's also when this deal will become official. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. I'll send it back inside.
Thank you, Sean. Still to come, John Cleese caught in a tricky situation north of Toronto. The actor forced to reach out for help online as he looks for new accommodations in cottage country.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, many of us know we need to be careful on our phones and computers to avoid scammers and viruses, but many people think if they have an Apple iPhone or Mac computer, they're safe from cyber attacks. But experts say that's not the case. I'll explain why. That story is just ahead.
We have a nice quiet evening ahead. Your temperature will sit at 23, feeling closer to 26 with the Humidex. Your sunset at 8:39 p.m. We have a really nice day ahead for tomorrow. Lots of sunshine. The UV index will be 8, which is on the high side. Make sure you've got your sunscreen, not just for tomorrow, but the rest of the week. Into the weekend, there is, unfortunately, some showers in the 7-day. I'll have all of those details coming up just after this short break. Our computers and increasingly our phones are targeted by hackers who are trying to gain access to personal information and our bank accounts.
For a long time, many people assumed Apple devices were untouchable to cyber threats because they were too tough to hack, but not anymore. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, many people with iPhones and Mac computers may think they don't need antivirus software, but there have been recent attacks against Apple products that are causing concerns. Now there are a few simple steps you can take to keep your devices safe.
Mark Doherty has been an Apple user for years.
I've always thought Apple products were safer. That's why I went with them to begin with.
But experts say all connected tech carries some level of risk. In fact, over the past year, Apple has rolled out a slew of software updates to fix flaws and even some critical vulnerabilities, including at least one, that could have left Apple users susceptible to dangerous malware had the patch not been installed.
Don't ignore operating system and app updates. This is where known security flaws are fixed, but it's up to you to install them.
To make sure your iPhone or iPad is up to date, go to Settings, General, Software Update. On a Mac computer, go to Launchpad, System Preferences, Software Update. And if your device isn't getting OS updates because it's too old, it's time to replace it. You should also be aware of phishing attempts. It's one of the more common ways users get hacked.
Most of the time, cyber criminals can only get access to your device if you give them a way in, say by clicking on a malicious link or an attachment in an email or even a social media post.
And if you thought Apple products don't need antivirus software, think again. Consumer Reports recommends AVG Antivirus for Mac. Testers found the free software easy to use and especially good at shielding online threats. On your iPhone, antivirus software can do things like block malicious websites, calls, and texts. But because of Apple's security restrictions, antivirus software can't scan iPhones for viruses.
Never really thought that, you know, I needed an antivirus or anything like that. I thought the security was already built into their iOS systems.
Since the security isn't foolproof, Doherty says he's thinking about adding extra protection to all his Apple devices.
And no matter what kind of device you have, make sure you're using strong passwords with all your online accounts. Use random words, numbers, and special characters, and consider using a password manager so you don't have to remember them all. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
All right, feels like Monday, but it's Tuesday, and this work week off to a good start.
Mm-hmm. I think, Nalini, this is a week to make plans outdoors for sure, no matter what you're doing.
No matter what, because we have a beautiful forecast ahead, and not only that, just really pleasant overnight lows. It's not just, I mean, a lot of us are at work, or maybe you're inside working from home, and you sort of miss the sunshine, but the evenings will be really nice as well. We'll get to all of that in just one second. Weather is brought to you by Train for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It's hard to stop a train. All right, let's get right to what we have. Our satellite radar, this is a very, I mean, it's boring, but boring is good this time of the year. That means that we don't have any wet weather. We don't even have cloud cover that we need to contend with for the evening hours. Just really very pleasant. In terms of daytime highs and the humidex and temperatures currently, we're a little bit on the cooler side, actually. Typically, this time of the year, we would sit closer to about 27 degrees on average. Right now, temperatures anywhere from about 22 to 25. With the humidex, it feels at about 30 or just below that for much of the lower Great Lakes. The warmest spot right now, while Windsor actually has backed off a little bit, it's at 26. It was warmer into the afternoon hours. Here's a look right now if you're out for a walk this evening, which is a nice thing to do. You've got nice temperatures and a nice southerly flow and really light winds too, just under about 30 kilometers an hour in terms of the wind gust. The temperature at 9 this evening will be 23, feeling closer to 26. Tonight's overnight lows, definitely not as cool as what we had. 17 expected for your overnight low. Tomorrow's daytime high sitting at 27 for Toronto, closer to 29 with the humidex, which isn't too bad. That will change as we make our way into the next few days. High pressure will dominate, but we have much warmer air in place. Actually, towards northwestern Ontario, we're looking at heat advisories in place. Our humidity starts to ramp up. Not tomorrow, but by the time we get into Thursday and Friday, a bit of a different weather pattern. Tomorrow's daytime high, again, 27, 28, feeling closer to 33 for Thursday, taking us into the weekend. We're into the 35, 35 with the humidex for Saturday and Sunday. Early next week, right now, we're looking at the humidex possibly just crossing over the 40-degree mark. So even though we've been complaining about the cooler temperatures and conditions, we have nice sunshine now ahead, and the heat and humidity, they're back. We'll have more just after this short break.
Health Canada is approving a new drug to treat mild and moderate cases of COVID-19.
And as our health reporter Pauline Chan tells us, the hope is to keep hospitalizations down amid fears of a fourth wave.
Sotrovimab, first approved in the United Arab Emirates more than a month ago, is a laboratory-made antibody that mimics those produced by the human body.
Our body builds antibodies to fight off viruses and bacteria. The problem with COVID is that it takes a while for the antibodies to build up, and damage takes place before they can build up, and an inflammatory response happens.
Sotrovimab is for early-stage patients to prevent them from worsening and requiring hospitalization.
Anybody over 55 or patients with certain comorbid illnesses like diabetes or asthma. In the study that we did with sotrovimab, there was an 85% reduction in hospitalizations or death with sotrovimab. So really probably the most effective agent out there.
Dr. Anil Gupta, lead investigator for the study, says it's even effective against the Delta variant.
The National Institute of Health in the U.S. has come out and said that there is data showing that that sotrovimab is effective against the variants.
And he's hopeful doctors here will start using the drug to prevent hospitalizations because our range of effective treatments so far has been limited.
So we do have some puffers we can use once somebody gets COVID to prevent worsening. There are other antivirals available. Just nothing is really all that effective.
Sotrovimab has been approved under an interim order by Health Canada for patients as young as 12. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Mississauga's Bianca Andreescu has confirmed she will play in the National Bank Open. The world's number five female player declined an invitation to go to the Olympics. She'd expressed concern about the current COVID-19 situation. Earlier, Andreescu made a first-round exit at both the French Open and Wimbledon. Nine of the top 10 players in the rankings are scheduled to play in next week's tournament, formerly known as the Rogers Cup.
And Naomi Osaka has also committed to playing at the National Bank Open. The world number two represented her native Japan at the Olympics, but she hasn't played in a WTA event since withdrawing from the French Open in late May due to mental health reasons. The 23-year-old also decided to take a pass on Wimbledon due to the same concerns.
The CFL is taking steps to encourage its players to get vaccinated, and that includes possibly forfeiting games and a loss of pay. The new policy says if a game has to be canceled and can't be rescheduled, the team with COVID-19 issues will be assigned a loss. If both clubs have COVID-19 issues, then both will forfeit the game and be assigned a loss. Players will receive their salary for the canceled game if a team can prove that 85% of its players have been vaccinated at least once. But if the club falls below that 85% threshold, the entire team will not be paid. The CFL's season kicks off Thursday night.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I really don't see our schools closing going into the fall and winter and spring. And I believe that's the same stance of all of our medical officers of health.
Updating our top stories, Ontario students will return to class full-time in September. There will also be extracurricular activities, sports, and clubs, but also physical distancing, cohorts, and mandatory masks from grades 1 to 12.
I hope it's going to be okay, so I really want them to go to school and study in person, like, you know, instead of online.
Students are excited, but some parents still have questions about the return to school plan. What about vaccination rates? Will some schools be more at risk than others? And should there be more of a focus on ventilation?
I received a phone call from Beckett telling us that his counselor had told him that there's COVID in the camp.
As guests started arriving, unpacking their things, Muskoka Woods Camp was forced to cancel this week because of a COVID-19 outbreak that was declared on Sunday. Four staff and campers have tested positive. Two other people have received preliminary positive results. Families across Ontario are focusing on the back-to-school plan.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Reshmi Nair and Jackie Crandles. Jackie, you'll be speaking with a pediatrician about the plan.
Yeah, Nathan, this long-awaited back-to-class plan from the province has finally arrived. We'll take a deeper dive into it, find out what's in it, what's not in it, and we'll get reaction from a pediatrician. We're also going to be speaking with the heads of some teachers' unions in the province to find out what their reaction to this plan is. And Reshmi, you'll be speaking with a Canadian filmmaker who has just done what no one else has done before.
Yes, Michelle, she spent the last 6 years going through the Trans-Canada Trail on foot, bike, skis, snowshoes. You'll have to hear from Diane Whelan yourself about what the last 6 years have been like for her. But did she realize there was a global pandemic during her trek? Find out on CP24 tonight.
All right. Thank you, Reshmi and Jackie. And don't forget, CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down slightly to close at $79.79 U.S. American benchmark oil lost 70 cents a barrel to close at $70.56. And the TSX Composite Index gained 78 points to close at 20,365.
Yes, doesn't it?
On what?
On how much you love him.
After the break, from big screen success to a small town situation in Ontario's cottage country, actor John Cleese turning to social media after losing out on a place to stay.
One of his most famous roles was playing the proprietor of the Fawlty Towers Hotel.
But now John Cleese has found himself in a very real accommodation conundrum right here in Ontario. CTV's Andrea Case reports.
In the new film Clifford the Big Red Dog, John Cleese introduces the character Emily to the puppy. In the much-loved children's books on which the film is based, the massive dog forces Emily to move. Cleese now finds himself in a similar situation. About to work on a film shooting on location in cottage country, the award-winning actor had planned on staying at a rental home in Huntsville. He had booked on the site Airbnb, only to find out yesterday it was no longer available. Now he's turned to Twitter to ask for help, posting, "Does anyone in Huntsville, Ontario, have a nice place I can rent to live in while I make a film? Airbnb took our money, but now say they've given our house to someone else. Why did they take the money then?" Ironically, the 81-year-old is coming to Canada to star in the film Cut the Painter. In it, the storyline has him taking in a friend who has nowhere else to stay. It's Twitter to the rescue, with 5,000 likes and more than 1,000 responses. Included in those offering a place to stay, Esther the Wonder Pig, prompting him to tweet, "So many helpful suggestions, we'll follow them up. Thanks, Ontarians." Now, as for Airbnb, they've asked Cleese to direct message them to help solve the issue. Shooting begins on September 4th. Andrea Case, CTV News.
Something tells us he'll have lots of offers for a place.
I would expect that.
Meanwhile, Nalini, it's a beautiful evening.
Oh, it's so nice outside right now. Just the perfect evening, and not just for today, but really the rest of this week into, well, a portion of the weekend. Our satellite radar not giving us anything. This is what we want to see this time of the year. It's nice and quiet, not a lot of cloud cover, and the humidity is actually not that bad. We're into the mid to upper 20s with the Humidex. Here's a look at your seven-day forecast tomorrow. Sunshine, 27, 28 for your Thursday. Friday, we're looking at the Humidex at about 30. Showers on Saturday. Early next week, it will feel closer to 39 to 40 degrees. That's a check on your forecast.
All right, thanks, Nalini. Be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight with Rashmi Nair and Jackie Crandles begins momentarily on CP24.
For Nalini and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Night.